Welcome to the podcast that is all about self-employment. We'll be sharing expertise on getting started, getting noticed, and getting it right, as well as dealing with getting it wrong. Your host, Julia Kermode, will help you get ahead so you get the success you deserve.
So, joining us today, I'm really pleased to have with us Emily Coltman, who's Chief Accountant at Free Agent, and we're here to talk about self-assessment and all the kind of potential pitfalls and a bit of hints and tips from Emily. So, Emily, anything you want to add to that introduction about maybe Free Agent, your role, or anything like that?
Hi, Julia. So, yes, as Julia said, I'm Chief Accountant to Free Agent. We make online accounting software for small service-based businesses, freelancers, contractors. We've got all manner of small businesses using the software. And if you're a sole trader or you're the director of a limited company, you might well be able to use Free Agent to file your tax return to HMRC. So hopefully Julia and I are going to have a bit of a chat about what help Free Agent could offer, but also give you a bit of background information about self-assessment, about completing it.
Brilliant, wonderful. So, shall we launch straight into it then? What on earth is self-assessment?
Yes, well, it's one of those wonderful accountantese expressions. All it means is that if you are running your own business, I'm going to assume for the purpose of this conversation, you're a sole trader. You're a sole trader. You have to tell the revenue how much your business earned, how much it incurred by way of day-to-day running costs. In other words, how much profit you made, which is your earnings less your running costs, because it's on your profit that they work out how much income tax and national insurance you owe them. I say they work it out. Strictly speaking, it's you who works it out, but the revenue supply calculations that you need to follow, and you have to fill in a self-assessment tax return, or a tax return for short, that basically says, this is how much I've earned, this is how much I've incurred by way of cost, one away from the other gives the profit, and then work out how much tax they can expect to get from you. As I say, it's called self-assessment because it's your responsibility to assess for yourself how much you've earned and how much tax you owe the revenue. But they do provide calculations so that you can literally calculators, I suppose I should say, so that you can literally plug your figures into those. But the advantage of using something like Free Agent is that if you're a sole trader using Free Agent to keep your books, to send your invoices to your customers, to keep track of your bills and anything you've spent out of your own back pocket on the business, and to keep track of what's going in and out of your bank account, then Free Agent can take those figures and put them into the tax return form for you and work out how much tax you can expect to pay. So basically, as long as you've entered everything into Free Agent correctly, then it should give you the correct amount of tax to pay. So that's the advantage of using something like Free Agent.
Brilliant. That sounds really helpful, actually, because I know for myself it's all too easy to forget details. And so if everything is all in the same place, like you described, then perhaps there's less chance of forgetting something as you go through.
Well, exactly, Julia. I think there is, because if you're adding up your figures in lots of different places, that's the way for mistakes to get made. That's the way for things to get missed out or added in twice. Yeah. Whereas if everything's in the one place, then it makes it much easier. So once you've added up all the income and costs from your trade, then you can put in other things like if you've earned any interest on a bank account, if you've had any dividends, perhaps if you've got a fund or something like that and you receive some dividends, you could put those in as well. Because the key about a tax return, which is the form that you have to send to the revenue to tell them what income you've made, is that you need to include on it all of your income, not just your income from your business, but all of your income all told. So suppose you are self-employed and you also have a part-time job, then even though your employer will have told the revenue that you've had a part-time job and you have earned wages and presumably paid tax on those wages, you actually have to tell the revenue in the round about all of your income. So on your tax return, you'll put details of your bank interest, as I say, your dividends, your income from your job, your income from your business, and so on and so forth. The only thing you'd leave out is income that isn't taxable at all. So that would be something like if you'd had some interest received from an ISA, because that's tax-free.
Yes.
Or if you've been lucky enough to win the lottery, gambling winnings are exempt, so you don't put that on your tax return.
You heard it here first. Lottery winnings are not taxable. Fantastic. But yeah, you just touched on something I was going to mention actually, which is all forms of income being sort of disclosed to HMRC, because I think it's quite easy to forget some parts. And I remember, friends of mine, when I first started doing tax return a few years ago, because I was renting out somewhere, she said, "Oh, well, let me help with your tax return." And I was like, "No, I don't need it. I can do it myself." And it turned out I couldn't really quite do it myself. But it's quite interesting though, because, you know, I knew that because I was having rental income from my house at that time, I knew I had to fill in a tax return. But I guess it's not foolproof. Not everyone would necessarily know that they have to fill in a tax return. And it's not just about income from being self-employed or, you know, running a business and that sort of thing, is it?
No, exactly right. And you mentioned one very good example there, which is income from a rental property. There are other sets of income that you might perhaps not think about, which is things like if you get income from a trust or mm-hmm. if you sell a large asset other than your family home, your main home or your car, you might well end up having to report that and pay capital gains tax. And that's another set of pages that you have to do on your tax return. So if you happen to have a second home, then you would be paying income tax on the rental income that you get. So you'd need to fill in the pages of your self-assessment tax return every year as you earn money from letting out that house. And then if and when you finally sell it, then there's capital gains tax due on it. So you've got to tell the revenue about that as well. My suggestion would be, if you're not sure whether or not you should tell the revenue about a particular source of income, have a look on their website. But if in doubt, don't try and hide it. The revenue don't like that. It's far better to ring them up and say, "I've got this income, should I put it on my tax return?" If they say no, well, fair enough, you don't have to worry about it. But they look far more kindly on people who do their best to do the right thing than if you try and hide it and think, "Oh, well, if I don't say anything, perhaps they'll go away." It won't go away. So it's far better to actually look it up. Knowledge is power, as they say. If you get the facts right as to whether or not you should include it on your tax return, then you're well on the way.
Yeah, and I think HMRC do very much, put the responsibility on the individual taxpayer to know. And I think some people assume that their accountants are somehow psychic. So I've had experience where someone has sort of complained about their accountant to the organisation that I was at the time, and the accountant was like, "Well, you didn't tell me all of that information."
Exactly.
It was just this breakdown of communication. So I guess also, if you are listening and you do have an accountant, then I guess don't assume that the accountant will or bookkeeper will know everything about all of your income.
Well, no, exactly. And sometimes as well, you need to make sure that your accountant knows all your circumstances because, for example, there is a tax charge if your income is over 50,000 and you have got responsibility for a child and somebody in your household is getting child benefit. You might find yourself having to pay back the child benefit. So it's as well as an accountant to ask the question about the household. Mm. It's also as well as a taxpayer if you let your accountant know, because they're not just being inquisitive about your household. It's quite often because it does make a difference to your tax. I remember some years back, I was doing the tax return for a lady client. She was a widow and she'd just entered into a new relationship, just had her new partner move in with her. So at that time, there were different tax rules around various family arrangements. So I asked her, I was having to ask her about her new partner, and I also had to find some way of finding out whether her new partner was a man or a woman. I asked her, thinking I was being clever, "What's your partner's name?" And it was Chris.
Oh no, that could be either.
It could be either. So in the end, I said, "I'm so sorry, but I have to ask, is Chris a man or a woman?"
That's
So, yes, your accountant is not being rude. Your accountant is not being inquisitive. They're just trying to get your tax figures right.
And it's so funny in a way, the amount of details that change year on year. So I guess from what you've just outlined, that particular rule about whether the partner is male or female perhaps doesn't exist anymore. I'm not altogether.
It doesn't.
Yeah, but stuff like that, details like that, change all the time. So you might fill in something and get one outcome one year, but I guess it might be different the following year. I don't know.
Yes, you're absolutely right. The rules can and do change. For example, the introduction of civil partnerships and same-sex marriage, both of which meant that couples might possibly be taxed differently. Certainly, we have now what's called the marriage allowance, where if you've got one partner who's a non-taxpayer and another who's a basic rate taxpayer, the non-taxpayer is allowed to transfer a little of their personal allowance, a little of their tax-free income allowance every year to their partner, in order that the partner can actually get some extra tax relief. But I say partner, it's actually got to be your spouse or your civil partner. Unmarried couples living together would not get that. So again, if your accountant starts asking you details about your husband's or wife's income, again, they're not snooping. It's because they're trying to save you a bit of tax.
I didn't know that particular detail. It just strikes me as quite backwards, actually, in today's society. Yes. But I'm who am I? I'm not making the rules. I'm sure it makes sense to HMRC. Who knows?
Well, HMRC don't make the rules either. They just have to administer them. It's the government that makes the rules.
Yeah. Well, perhaps we'll stay clear of politics.
Yes, maybe so. Yes, that's a good idea.
So, in terms of kind of self-assessments, we said we'd talk about what are the common pitfalls, and I imagine there's any number of them. So what are the ones that kind of spring to mind for you?
Oh, yes. I mean, we've touched on some of them already, which is not including everything, missing things out or counting things twice, putting in figures for the wrong year. I've had clients in the past give me a P60, which is the form that shows how much you've earned from your employment during the year, for the wrong year. They've given me the figures for the year ended April 2011, for example, when it was 2012 I needed. So that does happen. Also, things like thinking you can include certain costs, certain running costs, when you're not allowed to. And please don't blame your accountant if they say you can't include certain costs, because again, the rules aren't, they don't make the rules. They just have to interpret them, and they just have to teach them to you. I mean, there have been several cases of, for example, business owners who travel for business, but the whole travel area is very contentious indeed, because where a journey counts as from home to a workplace starts getting very much into the details. So again, your accountant is likely to ask you lots of questions about that, and your best bet is to answer them truthfully because if the revenue investigate, they will need to dig into the detail and find out more. I think there was a case just recently, actually, of a gentleman, I think he was a builder, who he'd established his base of operations in Swindon, where he'd set where he'd rented a room, but his family home was in Melrose. And I think that because the facts of his case meant that he'd chosen to set up a base in Swindon rather than choosing to operate from his family home in Melrose, he was actually not allowed to claim the cost of travelling between Melrose and Swindon. Whereas if the circumstances had been a little bit different, so say if he visited Wiltshire perhaps a bit less frequently, he might have been able to. It's often cases turn on sort of one or two facts, which is disconcerting when you're a taxpayer and you just like to know, well, can I or can't I claim it? It does get difficult.
And you're just kind of doing your best. And it sounds like that chap you just spoke about from Melrose was probably making what he thought to be a sensible, you know, decision, because in his view, it was a business cost. So, it's a tricky one. And just... Yes. Coming back to your point about information in the incorrect tax year, is it useful to outline for listeners when, so we know we've got the January deadline coming up, and that's right, really why we're talking about it. So what tax year is that for, if that makes sense, just to help
it
people?
Certainly does make sense.
I find it confusing.
I'm not surprised. The tax year runs from the 6th of April one year to the 5th of April the following year. And I could tell you why Britain's got such a silly date for a tax year if you really want me to. But the deadline that we're reporting for at the end of January is for the tax year, the 6th of April 2019 to the 5th of April 2020.
Yeah.
So it's for the income you've earned in that year. If you're a sole trader and you draw up your accounts every year to a date other than the 5th of April or by concession the 31st of March, then the figures you put on your tax return are the figures for the year that ended between those two dates. So suppose you draw up your accounts to the end of December every year, then it would be the calendar year 2019 that HMRC want to see on this tax return. Special rules apply if you're in the early years of your trade or if you've stopped trading, but I won't go into that because that would be a whole other technical discussion, but that is how it operates.
Yeah, so come on, tell us why do we have April as our tax year? What's the rationale?
And why the 5th of April indeed?
Yeah.
Why not the end of April? Well, the calendar year used to start on the 25th of March every day, the date of the Annunciation of the birth of Jesus. That was when the calendar year started. Back in 1750 something or other, it was decided that Britain should, England actually it was, not Britain, I think Scotland followed different rules. England should join the rest of Europe on the Gregorian calendar. We had been using the Julian calendar, but it was decided that we should switch. And that actually meant cutting 11 days out of the year. And at that point, the calendar year was also changed to start on the 1st of January. So they changed the start date of the calendar year, but not of the tax year. They just cut 11 days out. So that meant the tax year started 11 days after Lady Day on the 6th of April. There you
go.
Useless fact of the year.
I will try my best to remember that, and that can be, you know, one of my fascinating facts in my back pocket. But I bet I forget. One of the reasons why I wanted to ask about the tax year specifically was in relation to, I know that there'll be some listeners that have had different financial support from the government in relation to coronavirus, and I'm guessing most of those may not be due to be reported in the forthcoming tax return. It's a really difficult question for you to answer because everyone's circumstances are different, but is that broadly what you're
In fact, I think 9 times out of 10, the government has actually said that it's to be treated as income of the 2020-21 tax year, not of 19-20. So I would say that 9 times out of 10, you don't have to put anything like the self-employment income support grant on your 19-20 tax return. So that's not to worry about. For the job retention scheme, so if you have employees of your business, if you received anything before the 5th of April, I would say check the rules and see whether you should be putting that on your 19-20 tax return. If you received it after the 5th of April, then I don't think you'd have to. But again, do double check to make sure.
We're all kind of finding our way when it comes to these things, aren't we? And I think the government is, I don't know how accountants are keeping up with all the changes. Hopefully, if there are any mistakes, hopefully the government HMRC will be relatively generous towards it if there's genuine errors, I would hope.
They tend to be kind if it's a genuine error. They accept that people do make honest mistakes. And they also accept that we've all had an awful lot to contend with this year. So, well, not least themselves. You know, they will have had colleagues off sick. They will have had friends and family affected. We're all human, aren't we? So I'm sure that the revenue will look on it kindly. In fact, I understand there is actually at least one accounting institute lobbying the government to waive the £100 fines that you'd usually get for filing your tax return late, if for no other reason than that accountants are rushed off their feet trying to help their clients with all these schemes and at the same time have to do their tax returns as well. So for everyone's sake, for the sake of business owners who are desperately trying to keep their heads above water and at the same time having to fill in a tax return, and for accountants who are trying to advise and help potentially hundreds of clients who are struggling. Mm. The Institute is asking the government to please waive the £100 filing penalties for tax returns, maybe give a 3-month extension or a 2-month extension.
Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think I did see that headline actually, and I did a sort of internal cheer and thought, oh, that does make sense. We don't obviously know at the time of recording as to whether that will happen, but I can add that onto the show notes at the time, you know, this goes on the website. So if it does happen, I'll make a note of it there.
Brilliant, thanks.
So in terms of... One of the other things that kind of government is rumbling on around is around making tax digital. And I'm not sure all of our listeners may have even come across it yet, but does anything in relation to making tax digital come into effect for the tax returns in January?
No, is the short answer. At the moment, making tax digital applies only to VAT, which operates on a completely different plane. VAT is only for businesses that are actually registered for VAT. And in practice, all MTD for VAT means at the moment is that you need to keep your records digitally and file your VAT return digitally to HMRC, and that you can't manually key in figures from your accounts to your VAT return. But for self-assessment tax returns that we're discussing now, no, you don't need to worry about it.
Great, fantastic. And I think it is the plan for income tax to go digital at some point, but I'm not entirely certain of the time frame for that.
I think at the moment the time frame is 2023, but we may see that pushed further into the future.
We've got a while then until it needs to really affect our listeners. Maybe we'll look at the VAT side of things in a future episode, perhaps. So sorry, I didn't mean to get onto making tax digital. I was going to make a point when we were talking about the different financial support in relation to coronavirus, when we were talking about that. Just the point that we always make actually when you and I speak is in terms of keeping really good records. So I can well imagine, okay, so this year what we're pretty much saying is people that have had support 9 times out of 10, that doesn't need to be declared in their returns that people are doing for January. However, of course, this time next year, people will need to know what they've had, what it refers to, etc. So the importance of good record keeping cannot be overstated, can it?
No, I wholeheartedly agree. Because come this time next year, will you actually remember what that money coming in was? Will you actually remember that it was for a coronavirus self-employment income support scheme? If by this time next year, as we all devotedly hope, the pandemic is a thing of the past, and you're focusing on something else in your business, are you necessarily going to remember exactly what that particular tranche of money was for?
Yeah, exactly. And it's so hard. That is one of the difficult things actually with doing the tax returns, isn't it? That you're thinking back to stuff, and at the time you think, oh yeah, I know what that is. And then kind of a year later, you're stuck. So it is hard.
Life's got in the way. So that's why I would wholeheartedly urge your listeners to make sure you're keeping your records on a timely basis. Make notes, make sure you know, record things in your books as they happen. Use something like the Free Agent mobile app to take photos of your expense receipts and track them as they actually happen, because that's when it'll be fresh in your mind. That's when you'll remember, because obviously in normal circumstances we'd probably be traveling around quite a lot more, we'd be going to visit clients, we'd be going to visit friends and family, and it's difficult to remember 2 weeks later even whether you had that Costa coffee as you were going to visit your client or as you were on the way to visit Auntie Mavis. So if you recall the ones that you had on your way to visit your client as they happen, then you won't forget and you won't risk missing out on tax relief. So that's why I would definitely recommend recording everything at the time rather than risking forgetting about it.
It's so true, and there's so much technology out there and different apps and things like that, that can really help us. And, you know, I know for me, if I can get something on my phone, I'm fine.
Exactly.
If it's not on my phone, it's not happening. It's so helpful, the different apps. And I know also some banks will kind of categorize different expenses and things like that. So that's really helpful. And I think all I'm saying to our listeners is make the most of whatever tech you've got to help you.
Exactly. Yes. I wholeheartedly agree that.
So in terms of still, I don't really want to talk about coronavirus too much, but in terms of that, I know lots of people have been working from home this year a lot more than ever before. Could you talk us through any tax reliefs that they might be entitled to? And you know, this is probably the only coronavirus specific question I'll ask you, by the way, I'm sure it will affect a lot of people.
yes it will. Well, there's different rules if you are a sole trader or if you're working through a limited company, so I'll address both of them. For a sole trader, basically the rules have not changed because of the pandemic. You can still claim tax relief on a proportion of all your costs for working at home. You can't include the capital element of a mortgage, but you can include interest. You can include part of things like your electricity, light and heat, phone bills, and a proportion of fixed costs like mortgage interest, or if you rent your home, rental costs. Water you don't get to claim part of, but just about everything else probably you could look at claiming part of on a fair and reasonable basis. The revenue don't say you have to work it out by number of hours or by floor space or anything like that. They basically say use a fair and reasonable method. One thing I would say to warn you, though, is if you are working at home, make sure that you have a room that is used part of the time exclusively for business and part of the time exclusively not for business. Otherwise, when you come to sell the property, you could find yourself paying capital gains tax on the cost of that one room if you've used it just for business, because then it becomes a business asset. So I'm working in the room that's also used for book storage for me and my husband. We've got a lot of books on the walls that are on the shelves that are not business related. So this room is unquestionably mixed purpose. Yeah. If, on the other hand, you are the director of a limited company, then strictly speaking, you're only allowed to claim part of the extra cost that's incurred because you're working at home, not part of any of the fixed costs like rent or council tax. You also are only supposed to claim costs if you are working at home on what's called substantive duties. In other words, what you do at home earns money for the company. But 9 times out of 10 in the current situation, that is so. And also, if you have to work at home, not because you choose to work at home, but you have to work at home. But the government have specifically said that working from home, because the government tells you to in a pandemic, is having to work from home.
Okay.
So that there you're okay. And if you are the director of a company, or if you're employed by another business, then what the revenue have said is that if you claim £6 a week or less for working from home, they won't ask you to tell them how it was calculated. Right. They'll quite happily give you tax relief on that amount. Or you can work out how much extra light, heat and power you've used because of working from home and claim that.
Okay, great. So it sounds like there's lots of different approaches, but providing you take a logical approach to how you calculate your figures, it should potentially be acceptable. It doesn't sound like there's a right or wrong or a one size fits all.
No, there isn't, because the thing is that different business owners will do different things at home. You might, for example, get even if you've got two business owners in the same sphere, you might, for example, have one bookkeeper who would typically go out to their clients' sites and actually sit on the client's premises and do the books, and you might have somebody else who gets the records sent to them electronically and does their work from home. So the amount of work each of those does at home is likely to differ quite a lot. In normal circumstances, I mean, obviously at the moment, it's going to be at home for everybody.
Okay. What are the other kind of common tax reliefs that people might be able to have through their self-assessment?
Well, we've talked about working from home, definitely. This one's perhaps less important at the moment because people are making fewer journeys, but mileage in your own car is often overlooked. But you do need to be careful that it is for a business journey, not for either a personal journey or one that's or one whose primary purpose is personal. For example, if you've travelled in order to do your weekly shop and you drop off a box of clients' papers on the way, then the revenue probably aren't going to swallow that one.
Yes.
The primary purpose of the journey has to be for business.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes, I don't know if businesses these days do have pool vehicles so much, but I remember years ago, a friend of mine had access to a pool vehicle through business, and they had all sorts of rules and regulations about personal use. And I thought at the time it was potentially for tax purposes.
Yes, it would have been. I mean, that's slightly different because the vehicle would be owned by the employer.
Yes,
and there's potentially extra tax to pay for both the employer and the employee if the vehicle's being made available for private use.
Okay.
So what happens there is that the employer has to basically stop the employee from using the vehicle privately at all. So that would have been why your friend had so many rules about when and where they could and couldn't use the pool car. And also for it to be a genuinely pool car, it mustn't be more available for one person than anybody else. Okay. And the revenue are very, very strict about that. I remember way back in the day, I had one client, it was a family firm, and one of the sons actually managed to get himself disqualified for a year for drink driving. He wasn't hurt. Nobody else was hurt. So it was literally no driving for a year, and don't be such a twit in future. because he was disqualified, the revenue would still have theoretically said, well, that company van is available for private use. You could have a chauffeur to drive you. So the managing director of the firm wrote an official letter to say, you do not have use of the company van while you're disqualified.
Wow. Okay. So it's funny, isn't it? These kind of rules and regulations that we don't even necessarily realise are due to tax implications. So we've talked about travel. What about kind of food and subsistence? And I know that different companies over the different years I've worked at places have different rules, and I'm guessing that probably has a tax perspective. And obviously, we're talking about self-assessment rather than company policies. So what are the rules around it?
Yes, food and drink is very much a contentious issue. And again, it's different if you are a sole trader or if you're the director of a limited company. Incidentally, if you are the director of a limited company, your own tax return is only going to contain your salary and your dividends and any reimbursements of expenses over and above what you've incurred and any taxable benefits, like possibly the use of a company car.
Right.
In terms of what the company can include in its accounts, that's different again.
Okay.
In terms of, but the company's accounts are not in question on a self-assessment tax return. They'll go on the company's tax return. In terms of food and drink, if you are the director of a limited company, if you're employed by a limited company, then you can claim tax relief on the cost of food and drink whenever you're out and about on business. If you're a sole trader, the rules are much stricter. You can only claim tax relief on food and drink if you are... if your business is by nature itinerant, so for example, if you're a jobbing gardener, you go from site to site to site.
Okay, yeah.
Or if you're away from home overnight on business, or if your journey's outside the normal pattern of your business, then you're allowed to claim the costs of food and drink. Otherwise, you're out of luck. And there is also the situation where you might quite possibly get someone take their laptop and go and work in a cafe for a while in order to possibly make use of the free Wi-Fi or to meet other freelancers or whatever it may be. But you're actually not allowed to claim the cost of food and drink unless it fits into one of the three criteria I've described.
Okay.
So if you're going to work at Starbucks and you regularly do that and your business is not by nature itinerant and you're not staying overnight, then strictly speaking, you shouldn't be claiming the cost of the coffee, even though what you're actually doing is paying for coffee in order to use free Wi-Fi.
I never knew that. That sounds like the sort of thing that might regularly trip people up, actually, in their self-assessments. Yeah. So were there any other pitfalls that we haven't already covered that people might want to be aware of?
I think we've covered the main ones, definitely. We've talked about travel, we've talked about food and drink, we've talked about working from home. One other thing I would probably say is don't forget tax reliefs that you might be able to claim. For example, if you put money into a pension pot or if you give money to charity under gift aid, you may well get some tax relief on those. So again, it's a case of tell your accountant about them. If you want to get the tax relief, your accountant needs to know about them.
Yeah, I think that charity one does often trip people up. So so that's a useful reminder, because I think some people pay kind of a regular amount to whatever charity and it's just the norm and you kind of forget.
Well, I think both of us need to make sure we consider it, because yes, the charity will be reclaiming tax under gift aid, but we can actually get a bit of tax relief. If you're a higher rate taxpayer, then you can actually get a bit of extra tax relief if you've made charitable donations, so under gift aid. So it's worthwhile, as I say, tell your accountant about them.
Okay, brilliant. Yeah. So what is, if any, the most ridiculous self-assessment return you've been involved in and had to correct a client? Obviously, details are anonymous, but anything that you can share?
Well, this wasn't self-assessment as such, because it was the books for a company, but I think one of the biggest howlers I've ever seen, it was another family firm, and the bookkeeper, who I forget whether she was a daughter or a granddaughter or a niece, I can't remember, but she was at sea with bookkeeping, and she managed to put all the income in as costs and all the costs in as income. And I had to go back to the managing director of the company, who was patriarch of the family, and say, look, I'm dreadfully sorry, but I'm going to have to redo all these books.
Oh, that's hilarious. And it is quite easily done, though, isn't it? So, you know, it sounds basic, I always need an extra pair of eyes when I'm looking at my accounts. Just, it's so easy to miss something.
It certainly is.
Even something seeming basic like that, it happens to us all, doesn't it? Well, not to you.
Of course it does. Well, possibly not to me, but I'm an accountant. You know, if I tried to do what that family business was doing, then I would probably have made a mull of it. This is what some accountants do say to their clients. Sort of, if you've got an accountant whose client is a hairdresser, they might say something like, "Well, you cut my hair, and I'll do your books, and we're both doing what we're expert at. You know, I don't cut hair, and you don't do bookkeeping."
Yeah, there's a good reason for that. There's a good reason why we all have our own roles, isn't there?
Exactly. Exactly, yes.
All right, fantastic. Well, I think that concludes things. What I will do is put some links in the listening notes to HMRC's online help, and I know that they have a helpline as well, so anyone that needs that can have that. But yes, thank you very, very much for joining us again today, Emily.
That's a pleasure, Julia. Thank you very much for your time.
Wonderful.
Thank you for listening to All About Self-Employment, hosted by Julia Kermode. For more information on today's discussion, please visit iwork.co.uk, where you can also join our growing community. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, then we would love you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week.